People first organizations will win in the future of work.
Your only real asset is your people.
We all want purpose-driven work.
HR-led organization is the
future. Sorry, but leaders don't lead empty desks and empty shop floors.
Welcome to the People Strategy Leaders Show. I'm your host, Sri Chalapa, founder and president of Engagedly, and a serial entrepreneur in technology, films, and music. This is where we talk to people leaders, business strategists, and organizational savants about leading in the time of change. What is working, what is not working, and more importantly, what we should be thinking about. Stick around to the end of the show. We will reveal how you can be our next guest. And now, let's engage.
Hello and welcome to People Strategy Leaders Podcast. I am Sri Chalapa, your host. Today, I'm joined with Scott Miller, capping a 25-year career in which he served as a chief marketing officer and executive vice president. Scott Miller is currently Franklin Covey's senior advisor on thought leadership, leading the strategy, development, and publication of firm's best-selling books. Scott Miller hosts the Franklin Covey sponsored On Leadership with Scott Miller, the world's largest weekly leadership podcast, and C-Suite Conversations with Scott Miller, a podcast which features interviews with the world's top executives. Miller is also the author of multi-volume series Master Mentor, 30 Transformative Insights from Our Greatest Business Minds, HarperCollins Leadership, which features insights from his interviews with leading thinkers of our time, including Seth Godin, Susan Cain, Stedman Graham, Stephen M. R. Covey, Liz Wiseman, Mel Robbins, and many others. He recently released The Ultimate Guide to Great Mentorship in July of 2023 and is launching his seventh book in February 2024 titled Career on Course, 10 Strategies to Take Your Career from Accidental to Deliberate. Well, welcome to the show, Scott. It is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the spotlight today. Looking forward to talking about how to create an intentional career.
Yeah, I mean, this is an important one. We typically talk about leadership in our show and about coaching leaders, but also being a good people leader. But part of that is also helping people build careers within their organization they're in or outside the organization if there's not the right opportunities there. But that being said, it's also important for people to know what do they need to do to build a great career. And I think your book is very timely in that respect. So we'll talk about the 10 strategies, for building your career in a more deliberate fashion. Do you want to just quickly highlight those 10 strategies and maybe we can dive deep into a couple of them to really understand what are the things that are really important in those 10 strategies and why are those 10 strategies important?
I'd be happy to. The book is just released about 2 weeks ago called Career on Course. And after, a 30-year career myself from the front line up to the C-suite of a large public global company and interviewing countless hundreds of, recruiters and interviewers and chief people officers, I codify what I think are 10 consistent strategies for people who want to own their career and be less accidental and more intentional. Strategy number one is know your professional values. I think a lot of people may or may not have done the work on their personal values. But I take it a step further. To some controversial debate, I think you ought to have a list of personal values and a list of professional values, because that's the lens through which you make your decisions, and you know when are they ever in conflict or in alignment with each other. Number two is decide if you're a specialist or a generalist. One is not right, one is not wrong. But for people like me that are more of a generalist, I call a specialist orthodontist, a commercial airline pilot, massage therapist. These are specialists and people like me that are in sales and marketing and leadership and authorship. Generalists can often fall into the trap of the conundrum of comparing themselves to somebody else. And so number two is decide if you're a specialist and generalist. And there's really no action on it other than just the awareness, I think, is very helpful to know how quickly your career aspirations might come to fruition. Number three is study yourself. This is all about self-awareness and really understanding what it is like to lead you, collaborate with you, be married to you, work with you, partner with you. I think we spend a lot of time studying other people, our favorite authors, our favorite bloggers and keynote speakers, favorite thought leaders, but really do we spend enough time studying ourselves? Number four, and this is the crux of the book, number four is illustrate and recalibrate your long-term plan. I think too many people think of their career in terms of what is next, not what's after what's next. And so I teach people a multi-decade process of thinking their career in terms of many decades and starting at the very end, what is your ultimate goal? And then back casting all the ages, the salaries, the titles, and the skills you have to develop to think of your career long term. Number five is defined and build your brand. There is always a chasm between what you think your brand is and how people receive your brand is, how they receive your brand and what you want it to be. Some great work there. This is not an epiphany that everyone has in a brand, but most people's brands, my experience has been they're kind of left haphazardly to chance, and you ought to take much more deliberate over your brand. Number seven is take the lead with your leader. Just because your leader has the title does not mean they have the competence or the character or the maturity or wisdom to promote you and to understand how best to have high courage conversations with you about their performance, your performance. And so there's, you know, really leading up. Number eight is do the job you were hired for plus the one you want. That's pretty inherent in terms of not doing just the job you want, but the best way to get promoted is to crush the job you are in. And I think there's a level of impatience out there, people wanting to accelerate their career, maybe sometimes faster what the cultural norms are in their organization. Next is keep your ear to the ground. That's a process of making sure you know what's going on without becoming the company gossip. And then lastly is dig your well before you're thirsty. That's all about building a network that is mutually beneficial, that you are curating and nurturing so that when you are laid off, when you are fired, when you are disrupted, you're not scrambling to have people help you. You have people coming out of the woodwork to help you because you've been helping them for the last year, 5 years, 10 years. Those are the 10 strategies.
Yeah, I think you actually missed one. I think it's called be willing to disrupt yourself.
Thank you. Number six. Thank you for correcting me. Number six is be willing to disrupt yourself. All of us are going to be disrupted by outside forces. And I find the best careers are those of people that just take it upon themselves to disrupt their own level of comfort. Thank you for filling in the blank.
Yeah, I really like that one, actually, because it's important, because one of the things, you know, that you mentioned here is that think 10, 20, 30, 40 years ahead in terms of your career. But sometimes what you think maybe 40 years out might be no longer true 10 years in to that journey. And at that point, you're like, oh, shit, my goalpost moved, or it doesn't exist anymore. Right. And that, and you're like, oh, but I actually like doing this instead of what I thought I liked doing. And I'll give you an example. You know, I used to really think I would love to be an investment banker or a CFO. And after doing a couple of internships and a few job applications, I realized, and interviews, I was like, this is not my life. I can't do that. And I've done that twice in my life before. Earlier, I was trying to, I was on the path to doing a PhD in engineering. And then I thought finance. But I think I found my life as a generalist, as you said, being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So I think that's a disruption, because then you got to learn new skills and different skills what you trained for, right?
It is true. My strategy in the book is really just to get people to think beyond what's next, but to really think strategically long term. I mean, you may or may not at the age of 22 know that you want to be the CEO, or you want to be an entrepreneur, or you want to be the senior vice president of the Western region. This book is really not written for individuals that want to work on their own. This is a very organization-friendly book. It's really meant for people that want to have a long-term career, mainly inside an organization, and figure out how to work up through it. This is not the book for the person that wants to quit their job and start a side hustle. Lots of books on that. This is not their book. This is a book about how do you think about your career more strategically and how to understand how do your talents and your skills and your personality work within organizations where there will be disruption. So why not be the person that does it yourself, right? The plan is act or be acted upon, have a plan or become part of someone else's.
Correct. So I'm going to focus on the first one because I thought that was really interesting one for me, because we always think about personal values, like thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not cheat.
Are the 10 commandments.
I know. I'm working down that path. Not all 10. Thou shalt not kill is part of that too. But there are other personal values, right? I will only work with people I can trust, business with people I can trust. I mean, those are some of my personal values, I guess, in some ways. But there's a litany of such personal values that everybody has. Talk to me about professional values. Like, what is that? And I looked, you know, in your book, and there's some of the professional values were very interesting. Some of them are related to making money, for example, was one example I read. So now we're talking about subjects that might be taboo to talk in public. So I do believe, but it needs to be talked about. So can you talk about that and some examples of what that might look like?
Well, a couple of thoughts. First of all, I don't think anything is taboo anymore. So I think all the rules are off. So people can talk about everything they want to now. So you certainly could talk about your professional values. Let me rewind a bit. I don't think most people have identified their personal values. I think most people could come up with a good set extemporaneously in a meeting or at a cocktail party, but I don't think the vast majority of humans have taken the time to codify, write down, and hierarchically rank their personal values. And that's the first part of the exercise. What's that? Yeah.
I said guilty as charged.
Well, I mean, I think that's true. So the first part of the book, that chapter, is say, hey, first, I want you to codify your personal values. Don't say freedom. Don't say choice. Don't say patriotism. Take a couple of weekends and write down your personal values and commit them to memory. Mine are purpose, health, integrity, loyalty, positivity, abundance, and learning. P-H-I-L-P-A-L, PhilPal. I'm very clear on them. That took me several weeks to codify, and they change as my roles change in life. And then and only then do I think you move to your professional values. Your professional values really are the lens through which you make your professional decisions. By the way, my purpose in life has very little to do with my career. My vocation is not my avocation. I work to earn money, period. It's my number one professional value. And I'm very comfortable talking about that in lots of settings. My number one professional value is to maximize my income. My number two professional value is to work for and with an organization that I respect their brand. And number three is to work with people who I like and love and who like and love me. Now, I could have earned a whole lot more money working for a company with people I did not like. But then number two and three values would have been not part of the process. So I think the reason it's important to have a list of personal values and professional values, as I write in the book on numerous occasions, they're often in conflict. If you're in sales, your number one value probably is maximizing your income, or you wouldn't be on a full commission plan. But that might be in conflict with your number one value, which is family. Maybe your grandfather needs you around, so you can't move to a sales territory where there's more business or face-to-face meetings. The reason I have two lists of values is to identify when are they in conflict, when are they in alignment, and do you choose to do anything about that? Most people's career frustrations or their career cul-de-sacs are blamed on other people when in fact they are because they have not identified their two sets of values and they don't know what is the cause of the frustration.
It's very interesting. And I'll just read out some of the professional values that you kind of listed as options to help, because I was trying to figure out what does it mean, you know, but you put a list together in the book, which is very, very helpful. You know, like brands I use and trust is an example. Entrepreneurial spirit, I think that's an important one for somebody like me. Risk-taking culture is an important one. But you also mentioned like proximity to family. I would probably say that's the one that's not very important to me.
Yeah.
So, you know,
here you are in America.
Yes. Stock options, team atmosphere, international assignments, for example, is a good one. So I don't think people think like that when they talk about professional values. They might be thinking, oh, a place where I can grow and get promoted.
People think, where can I earn the next $5,000? I like the amenities? Does this seem like a safe place? By the way, those are also professional values. And I would just mention that you and your leaders and your readers and your listeners and viewers should pick your professional values only based on what you value. Do not pick your values on what anybody else thinks or cares. I don't care what you think about my values. They are my values. I'm very comfortable talking about them. And everybody who knows and has read this book knows that my number one professional value is maximize my income. And I'm super comfortable talking about it.
Yeah. I think the one thing is a lot of people might, like I said, might be gun shy about admitting some of those professional values, you know, but.
Then they're not going to take control of their career.
Right.
Because if you want to take your career by the horns and you have them lead it, then you've got to be very clear about what is most important to you and be able to express that to yourself and to your prospective employer. Now, not in the beginning, right? If you want to land a job somewhere, the last thing you tell them is what's important to you. The first thing you do is tell them why I am the right person to progress your goals.
Right.
You should be solely focused on how I can help your organization progress your mission and goals. And then once they are convinced that, that is when you talk about, now here's what's important to me, and decide if you have a deal or no deal.
Yeah. Yeah. So another
one, people make that mistake. Sorry for interrupting. I think most people walk in to negotiations and interviews talking about all the things they need. And that is the last thing you do. Now, it's arguably the most important thing you do, but you do that after you have convinced the hiring organization why you are the right person to hire to progress their goals. Once you've convinced them of that, you're in a better position to make sure they understand what's important for you, for them to accommodate.
And I think it's very important as a leader to know that for their people, because that helps employee retention, employee growth.
Yes.
Maximization of the organization's profits.
Yeah.
Because if you align better with their growth needs or their own or their values, in this case, professional values, then you obviously will maximize their likelihood to stay in the organization and contribute.
That's exactly right. If I argue that my number one professional value is to be able to, travel internationally, your company may or may not have that opportunity, but you may decide to send me on 3 or 4 trips a year that are good for the company, but also keep me around because now you know that's important for me. I'm not suggesting you make up bogus trips, but if I could go work a trade show at the London Book Fair just as easy as you can, I don't want to go to London. It's happening right week. I send other people there because other people have that as an important part of their job. They want to travel. I've been to London 40 times. I lived there for a year. No need to go back. Lovely city. But if I can gain someone's loyalty in my firm by sending them, man, what a win for both of us.
Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely true. So the one that I really, I think I have some questions on, which
Please.
Is number 5, define and build your brand. Yeah. I don't even know if people, now obviously, I know that as a CEO, founder of a startup, that brand is very important. So I focus on Engagely's brand, but also my own personal brand, which is one of the reasons I do the podcast as well. But what does that mean for an average person who's looking to build a career? Like, what do they do? And what does brand mean, first of all, for them? So that maybe you can define that. And then what do they need to do to actually define and build their brand?
So in this book, there are 10 exercises that are pretty intensive for all 10 strategies. And these are not exercises you do in 5 minutes. Some of them will take you 2 or 3 days if you really want to maximize the content. This is not an epiphany. Every person has a brand. My brand is I have an indefatigable level of energy. I process very fast. I'm super impatient. I sometimes talk too straight. I can hurt your feelings because I'm so brief and clear in how I speak. I'm a very abundant person. I'm a very loyal person, sometimes to a fault. I tend to assume I know all the facts and I interrupt people when, in fact, if I would just be more patient, they would explain to me the full picture. I mean, and on and on and on. It's because I'm self-aware, because I study myself. Everybody has a brand and you are rarely seen how you think you are seen, right? I'm seen as being very anxious and very impatient. I'm always on edge when, in fact, I don't feel like I'm an anxious person. But people tell me, no, Scott, you seem pretty anxious. And sometimes, Scott, you seem pretty angry. And I look at me on the podcast. I say, I'm not angry. And they say, no, you look angry. No, I'm just passionate. But Scott, you look angry. I mean, look at yourself. And so there is always a chasm, dissonance between how you think you are perceived and how you are perceived. I think I'm a very productive person. And I would say some people would say, yes, Scott, but you take on too much. Because even though you deliver, you often deliver late. So my brand is not keeping promises. My brand is making promises and then usually delivering them a little bit late. So everyone that reads this book should do the exercise of what do you think your current brand is? And I spend a whole page and a half talking with some pretty outrageous confessions about my own brand. Actually, it was 3 pages long and the editor cut it down and took out like 15 things I wrote about myself because I am self-aware. Because I study myself and I ask for feedback a lot. The second exercise then is to go pick, I think it's 3 people that you trust in the organization and ask them, how do they see your brand? How do they experience your brand? And then to determine where are the disconnects and ultimately, what do you want your brand to look like? And what behavior changes do you need to make in order to achieve that brand? And then also, is that brand valued in your current organization? I worked for the Walt Disney Company for a very short period of time, about 4 years, and very conservative company. And I was the wrong fit for the Walt Disney Company, not the right fit. And so I think it's important to know what your brand is, how others see your brand, where is there a disconnect for the brand you want, and is the brand you want the brand your current employer or future employer values?
So this is a brand that you would show internally to an organization, but should they be doing this publicly as well with the advent of different social media channels and other mechanisms like podcasts and stuff?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think you have one brand. I mean, and let me say, you have a brand that's multifaceted. I mean, people know that I am the father of three young boys. Millions of people know this. They also know I do not like parenting. I talk about it very openly. I am not a natural parent. Most days I hate parenting. My boys know I love them and they know I hate parenting. We talk about it pretty openly. Hopefully they won't need too much therapy. And so my brand is a guy that's very open, very vulnerable, very, I mean, heck, I wrote a whole series of books about management mess and marketing mess, right? All the mistakes I've made in my career. I've built a brand that I am willing to talk about my mistakes, not as a crutch to keep making them, but to teach other people through them. And so you have to figure out what you want your brand to be. And then really only you can cultivate that. And it's never too late to change your brand, but you can't talk yourself out of a problem or a brand that you behaved yourself into. You can only behave yourself into a brand that you want. You have to have a reputation of behaving in alignment with that brand. You can't declare yourself trustworthy and then violate people's version of what trust is. You have to behave yourself into a reputation of being trusted if you want that to be your brand.
And the reason to, I'm going to go back to the core principle here, which is the reason you want to build a brand is because then you take a more deliberate approach to your career. Otherwise, it's accidental and whatever happens, happens. Wherever the wind flows, you sail that way.
That's right. Or the brand you have is kind of accidental. You didn't realize you're seen as the person that is always late to the meeting or always offers up an interesting solution, but it's really for the wrong problem, right? What is your self-regulation? Do you process things externally like I do? I have to say something in order for me to determine, do I really believe that? As a result, I say things I don't believe. I'm an outward processor. Other people have to think about it for a day or two before they opine in, and they're probably seen as people that are quite quiet and maybe not as high contributors in meetings. You have a brand. The only way for you to really understand it is to ask other people to describe your brand. And that is part of the exercise.
Yeah. Well, this is very helpful. Because that way you at least know if your brand is on the wrong path that you want it to be, you can take some corrective action.
Right. Or it could be on the right path, but for the wrong leader in the wrong organization.
Right. Right. Exactly.
I'm going to guess the Episcopal Church wants people with different brands than Tesla does. Maybe you're in the wrong building. Maybe you're in the wrong company.
That is true. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure why I picked the Episcopal Church and Tesla, but I was trying to think of like opposite brands, right?
Well, that's true. But I was thinking about when you said Walt Disney World, because I actually did a project for Walt Disney World back in the day as well. And you are absolutely right. It was a very much a conservative, friendly, super friendly organization. I'm not sure it's the same anymore. It's probably changed quite a bit in the last.
Well, I think it's highly political. I think, you know, back in the 90s when I worked there, you didn't leave your cube without your jacket on and a tie. It's very much changed, right? But it was just not the right place for me at that point in my career. And I became really understanding through a lot of self-inquiry and high courage conversations my leaders had with me. It was not the right place for me with my brand. Now, I could have changed my brand to fit the company, but I think it would have been disingenuous and inauthentic. And I don't think anybody's interested in force fitting their brand into a culture that doesn't value who they are.
Yeah. The last one here also, I think, is something that I wanted to get some more insight into. Dig your well before you're thirsty.
Yes.
What are we talking about specifically there?
So this actually is the name of a book written by Harvey McKay. the very famous motivational speaker, Dig Your Well Before You're Thirsty. You know, 80%+ of jobs are filled through referrals. They're not filled because of some algorithm on a sorting, you know, software matching keywords on resumes. At the end of the day, the vast majority of roles are filled through network. You may not know who is going to be your next leader, but you know the person who's going to introduce you to them. So in this chapter, I talk about how important it is to constantly be building your network. I worked at the Franklin Covey Company for 25 years. I became a very influential member of the board, the senior leadership team, was a named officer in the company as the chief marketing officer. After 25 years, I had a large network. Mm-hmm. But everybody worked inside of Franklin Covey. I had very little network outside of the company, and my colleagues weren't going to be the person to find me my next career. So I kind of sobered up quickly to realize, my goodness, I've got to build a network outside of this company. It's way too insular. Everybody knows the same people. So whether that is TikTok, probably not given what Congress is doing with TikTok in the US, whether it's LinkedIn or X or Facebook or you name it, you need to start building a network. And that doesn't mean just going out and connecting to everybody you can in the hope they can help you find a job someday. No, this is about being a very abundant person, helping people, connecting others, offering advice, posting on LinkedIn, having an abundance mentality where you are helping as many people possible because that's who you are and that's one of your values. Remember, one of my seven values is abundance. And it always comes back to help me in the end when I need help from somebody else. Dig your well before you're thirsty.
That's a very good one. Yeah, I appreciate it.
You cannot build your network overnight. It's too late.
It is. And people do it. Here's the other problem. People do network. They do network only purely for the sake of getting something out of it.
Yeah.
You know, with a vested interest that I will network with this person because
everybody sees right through that. That's
and
a self-serving.
And you know that you are trying. You can just see it's not genuine. It's not authentic at that point. You got to network just for the purely sake of networking and helping people building connections.
The second thing you said, you should network with the pure intention of helping other people, period. And you may never call on them to help you ever. But someday you might, and when you do, that well is not dry, that well is full.
Yeah. Well, Scott, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. We only have so much time on this podcast.
I know.
Going on and on. This book is right on course. It's actually Career on Course. So thanks for sending me a copy, and I really enjoyed going through this book. I have a few highlights that I will probably talk about in some other channels as well.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for the platform and the spotlight today. Nice being with you.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good one.
Sri Chalapa here. Thank you so much for listening to the People Strategy Leaders Podcast. If you are a successful leader or a people strategist who would like to be on this program, please visit engagedly.com/People Strategy Leaders Podcast. If you got something out of this interview, would you share this episode on social media? If you know someone that would be a great guest, tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag People Strategy Leaders. I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter at Sri Chalapa. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time. And thank you to Patrick Ramsey, sound engineer at Kalinga Production Studios, for recording and mixing this show.